Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush has been polling surprisingly well in New Hampshire, a swing state. He leads the pack of nearly 20 GOP presidential hopefuls, even though in the crucial state of Iowa, he polled behind Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. On his website, Bush tells the romantic tale of how he met his wife, Columba, in Mexico during an exchange program. He also admits, quote, "I know I'm unique in that I have a brother and a father who have both served in this nation as president." But Jeb Bush has had to work hard at distancing himself from his brother, George, who was arguably the most reviled president in the nation's history. What he's also obscuring are his family's deep connections to Wall Street. Joining me now is Nomi Prinz, journalist and senior fellow at Demos. Her books include Black Tuesday, It Takes a Pillage Behind the Bonuses, Bailouts, and Backroom Deals from Washington to Wall Street, Other People's Money, The Corporate Mugging of America, and her latest, All the President's Bankers, The Hidden Alliances That Drive American Power. She's also a former investment banker at Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers, and she just published a piece on Tom Dispatch based on an excerpt from All the President's Men entitled All In, The Bush Family Goes for Number 3 with the Help of Its Bankers. Welcome to Uprising, Nomi. Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Well, first, can you tell us a little bit about what specifically we need to be paying attention to when it comes to the Bush family? This would be the first time if Jeb Bush did indeed become the nominee and went on to become the president, that you would have three administrations from the very same family. You've pointed out that their Wall Street ties run really deep, all the way back to George H.W. Bush and his ancestors. Can you hear me, Nomi?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. Can you tell us how far back the ties go between Wall Street and the Bush family, just sort of historically?
They basically go back almost 100 years, actually more than 100 years, to George H.W. Walker, who was an investment banker and had a company by that name, by their last name, who's the great-great-grandfather of Jeb Bush. And his company ultimately was acquired by Merrill Lynch, which was acquired by Bank of America in 2008 during the financial crisis. So there's a through line through the Merrill Lynch connection into Bank of America more recently that goes back to really the turn of the century, last century, the early 1900s. So that's where a long tail element of the Wall Street connection to the Bush family, or one side of the Bush family, but of course it also emerges together as the generations go forward, that has been in existence for that long a period of time. And of course there's more recent connections which have been related more to appointments through Goldman Sachs, with Hank Paulson being an appointed Treasury Secretary to George W. Bush in 2006, and all the relationships with Goldman Sachs that entailed as well, and continues to entail and will become prominent, more prominent into this election.
So, Nomi, what about the fact that Jeb Bush is likely going to be calling on these Wall Street friends of his? Are they already pouring money into his campaign? Do we see any evidence yet?
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence. First of all, there's a couple things. One is that even before he announced his candidacy for nomination for the Republican ticket, they were already gathering together, particularly in Wall Street, and a lot of the CEOs that were connected to Wall Street CEOs. For example, the Wall Street Journal in December of last year, 2014, ran a poll across the Republican candidates and potential candidates where 73% of the most senior CEOs, many of them with ties on Wall Street or on Wall Street, wanted Jeb to be the candidate for the Republican ticket. So this was before he even was going to run. And we should really note that the whole sort of dance around when he was going to actually officially announce his nomination and everything, what happens in these circles, the large money circles, these family connections that go on for centuries that have all of these power ties, is that everybody knew in that collection of individuals that he was going to run. There was never any question. The only issue was the timing with which he would announce it to the American public, which he did more recently, but they already knew. Another example, though, since he announced it just this last couple weeks, is they had a large donor call for one of his four super PACs. And on that call, the leader of that particular super PAC, Rice Power, was basically telling the donors that they had already raised $17 million in a very short period just for that super PAC. And this is out of the full amount, the $80 to $100 million that the Jeb Bush group had said they were planning to raise by the middle of this year, so really by the end of this month. So that was one PAC in one tri-state area raising, at that point, $17 million. I would think by now, a couple of days later, it's $20 million. And that's just one aspect of his fundraising capabilities. It relates more to Wall Street CEOs or hedge fund managers, or basically people within the upper echelons of the finance community.
And Nomi, can we, looking back at the previous two Bush presidencies, can we see a revolving door between Wall Street executives and members of the Bush cabinets to get a sense of what Jeb Bush is going to do? Is there going to be this real connection with actual people moving from positions of power in Wall Street into government positions because their benefactor, because Jeb Bush is thanking his benefactors?
Well, absolutely. The issue of these kind of power families and these political dynasties, of which the Bush one would be the preeminent one in American history if Jeb Bush were to become president, is that you do pay back the people that provided you favors and money, and not just money individually, but collected money because of their stature along the way. And we saw that actually going back to even Jeb Bush's father, the first Bush that was in office, where one of the Treasury Secretaries when he was Vice President that Ronald Reagan appointed was Don Regan, who was, in fact, the Merrill Lynch CEO at the time, and that was a Bush connection. Nicholas Brady, another Treasury Secretary during that time, a Bush connection. So there's definitely this idea of picking people that are friends. Of course, Hank Paulson, a Bush connection under George W., becoming the Treasury Secretary. There's no reason to assume that Jeb Bush won't pick someone from the street to become, the Treasury Secretary or one of the senior economic advisors. That's another role that a lot of these people typically play. If it's not officially the Treasury Secretary, it's the unofficial head of the National Council or the economic advisor to the president. But regardless, that's a person that has a lot of power with respect to financial policy, economic policy, and having the president's ear, and also, of course, receiving the favor from Jeb Bush in order to be president in return for their support along the way. And it should be noted that not only do these favors go back and forth and have gone back and forth for generations of the Bush family and other powerful families in the presidency, but there's a lot behind this one. It is the third time. All of the power of living individuals on Wall Street and within the Bush family connections currently, in our current period of time in history, all of that is galvanized now behind this third person. They have just no interest in losing. The people that back him have no interest in losing. And they know that as a result, there are favors that will be willingly distributed, regardless of what may or may not be said publicly to the American population in a potential Jeb Bush presidency.
Right. One of the things that you bring up in your piece is the now sort of forgotten crisis of Enron in the early 2000s. And you point out how G.W. Bush ended up obscuring that the fallout from Enron very conveniently when the September 11th attacks happened. Can you remind us what happened there? And if that is an indication of the kind of president his brother Jeb might be.
Yeah, there was a timing with the Enron scandal, which was a large poster child for fraud in the energy sector. But of course, Enron was not just an energy company; it was an energy company that worked with a lot of Wall Street banks as well as with its own financial individuals, trading, hiding things, creating all of these books that were non-transparent to shareholders of Enron or to anybody, that were models of some of the things that were created by the banks at the time, that are still created actually by the banks at the time. And with the partners, some of the banks that we are talking about have just been talking about now, such as Merrill Lynch. They were key components of helping Enron with some of its shady dealings, some of the things that it put off its books so that people, shareholders, regulators, and so forth, couldn't see what they were doing. Of course, Enron ultimately imploded in a kind of a bit unfolded over a couple of months. There were some very senior officials on Wall Street and in Washington trying to keep it from imploding, but it did anyway. And it happened to have been in the beginning of the fall of 2001, when a lot of the problems at Enron, this illegality, the fraud that was culminating at Enron, of course, with the CEO there, Ken Lay, who was a Bush family friend and a Cheney connection, Dick Cheney, who was the vice president at the time under George W. All of this was coming to a head, but concurrently, what had also just come to a head was 9/11. And so there was this juxtaposition of what was happening on a sort of grander scale, the fight against now the threat of terrorism and what happened in 9/11, and Bush sort of, George W. Bush, diverting attention from these scandals that were now just not just at Enron, but they're actually enveloping the entire energy sector, because many of the deals that Enron had done in a huge way, other energy companies based in Texas, where the Bushes have a lot of ties and so forth, were also doing some of the same things, just on a slightly smaller scale. So all this is going on. While George W. is really diverting attention with his advisors to what needs to be done with respect to the terrorist attack. And one of the things he did out of the gate at 9/11, while the Enron stuff was going in the background and 9/11 had just occurred, was that he actually urged the SEC at the time to, for example, reduce some requirements in terms of trading limits, so that when the markets opened back up after the first couple period days of the period around 9/11, there would be a tremendous surge in the ability of the larger banking institutions to kind of make a play and raise the markets. And Bush put it in terms of, if we raise the markets, we raise America. And it became this idea that the bankers, Wall Street, and so forth are really the engine of how America will show itself to be strong in the face of terrorism. And of course, a couple of years later, we have the war in Iraq. But during that period of time, what was going on was all the other corporate frauds were coming out, and the bank associations with these corporate frauds were coming out. Everything was really coming to a head in 2002 and into 2003, before the war in Iraq. So it was sort of a dance between what could be focused on in terms of foreign policy and military policy with what was going on in the financial community and with corporate policy and corporate frauds, from the standpoint of the White House, the Bush White House, being kept on the back burner.
And of course, a few years later, G.W. Bush would go on to help out his banker friends once more with a massive bailout in the wake of the recession. Now, let's talk about the fact that during Jeb Bush's presidential campaign, we have a very different political and financial landscape in terms of these super PACs, political action committees that have been enabled by the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, the flood of money from Wall Street and Wall Street executives. Has already been shown to be unprecedented in the last two elections. What do we know about super PAC money flooding Jeb Bush's campaign so far? Can you name some names about who he counts among his top backers?
Well, at the moment, one of the things is that it won't be until July that we get an official report of three of his super PACs. He has four super PACs. The fourth one, it's a 501(c), and it's basically not required to give any public information on donors or the particular amounts for them. So one of his four super PACs, we may never know exactly who gave what, and by a result of that, it's likely to be a pretty big total figure. But in some of the other super PACs, we do know that the individuals who have already been having large ticket dinners for him, like Hannah Kravitz, who's a large, billionaire brokerage company hedge fund company head on Wall Street, has already had $100,000 per person gatherings at his Park Avenue home. So you tally up something like that, you get $1 million with 10 people walking in the door. And so those kinds of things have been going on, and they continue to be planned. My guess, and again, we don't know, but judging from the call where there was a number that was issued of $17 million, which I believe right now is probably at least around $20 million for one super PAC that is going to have to disclose information. And the other three, I mean, I think he does come very close to the $80 to $100 million target for going through the middle of this year when we actually get some of the main figures in July. There are other Wall Street figures, for example, that haven't yet had a number attached to their name, but are going to be involved or have been involved in some capacity. John Thain, for example, who was a former number two at Goldman Sachs, under Hank Paulson, when Hank Paulson became Treasury Secretary, before he became Treasury Secretary, John Thain ultimately went to become the CEO of Merrill Lynch, that company we talked about before, as well as head of the New York Stock Exchange before that, and as a favor almost to Merrill Lynch when it was imploding in the financial crisis of 2008, Hank Paulson and others in Washington enabled it to be taken over by Bank of America and enabled John Thain and others to get big bonuses at the time as well. So he's definitely going to be someone in there trying to either give money for him from himself, raise it into super PACs, you know, have that sort of outside group donors that the candidates are able to have in this particular election, which will make this the most expensive election by far in history.
Finally, Nomi, we, of course, will be discussing a lot on this program Hillary Clinton's candidacy, and the Clintons certainly aren't immune from the same kind of Wall Street ties. We just have about a minute left. In a minute, can you hint to us what we should also be worried about with the Clinton presidency's ties to Wall Street?
Exactly. I mean, it's exactly the same thing, quite frankly, with respect to Wall Street. Whatever, again, is said publicly, the ties are pretty much the same with slightly different people. You know, I talked about Goldman Sachs, Hank Paulson, John Thain, the Republican side of Goldman Sachs, the former Goldman Sachs, very rich and powerful executive. But then Hillary Clinton, of course, has the Robert Rubin contingent, the Democratic contingent, and has a lot of backing herself from Goldman Sachs. She has a lot of backing from Citigroup, you know, and Bank of America will be backing Bush. So, you know, you have this split on Wall Street where either way, either candidate, there's been tremendous history, tremendous support, tremendous money, tremendous alignment of ideologies and policy. And honestly, whichever candidate wins the presidency, and it will come down to Hillary versus Jeb, Wall Street's going to be taken care of, and there will be a status quo there, and they will all have donated money to their favorite candidates along the way.
So certainly Wall Street isn't taking any chances by funding both sides, and that definitely ends up happening election after election. Nomi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
My guest Nomi Prince is a senior fellow at Demos. She's the author of the book All the President's Bankers, The Hidden Alliances That Drive American Power. She's also a former investment banker at Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers. And she has written a piece based on her book, or based on an excerpt from her book, All the President's Bankers, that we will post a link to at uprisingwithsonali.com.